We're holding on Kufufov Amadei's 14 lines from the bottom. We learned in the Mishnah yesterday about an achbar shechetzia v'chola, an achbar shechetzia bosa v'chetzia adama, a mouse or some mouse-like creature which is half flesh and half dirt. And we talked about that. What does that mean exactly? Does it actually mean that it generates spontaneously from the dirt and there comes a point in its life cycle when it literally is still half dirt? Does it mean maybe that it's born underground and comes out covered with dirt? Does such a creature exist? Many of the ancient writers write about it, but Amnon writes that many reliable people have told him about it, et cetera, et cetera. We talked all about that yesterday. In any case, so the Mishnah had said that if a person touches the, if the creature is dead, or the sheretz is never metame when it's alive, only when it's dead. So if a person touches the creature, and when it's dead, if he touches the flesh part, then he becomes tame. But if he touches the dirt part, the Tanakhama says he won't be tame. Rabbi Yehuda says it depends. If that dirt part is the part that eventually is going to become flesh, then he'll also be tame as though it was part of the flesh now. So the Gemara says, when the Tanakhama says that if he touches the flesh part, he'll be tame, then that would be only if you have only if it's formed into a creature from head to toe. So in other words, you can have one side of it is completely formed from head to toe. Now it can be considered, even though the other half may still be dirt. Nevertheless, at that point, we can consider it enough of an animal, enough of a sheretz, that now if a person touches it when it's dead, then he'll be tame. But not let's say, for example, if only the front half of it has become flesh and the back half not, then Rabbi Shlomo ben Levi is saying that even the front half would not be the tachin. Now, the Gemara says, Ika de Masni la Seifa. On the other hand, there are those who learn Rabbi Shlomo ben Levi's statement as referring to the Seifa, where the Mishnah had continued, Rabbi Yehuda ema afan ageya ba adama shekneged abasa tamei, where Rabbi Yehuda said that even if the person touches the dirt opposite the flesh, meaning the dirt that eventually is going to turn into flesh, then Rabbi Yehuda says tamei, then he's going to be tamei. So now, in the second version, Amud Rabbi Shlomo ben Levi b'hushu hishritz al pnei kulay, that it would only apply, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, it would have to be that at least one side, that you have one side of the animal has completely formed. And then Rabbi Yehuda would be saying, so let's say, in other words, you have, so let's say the right half of the creature has already formed into flesh, and the left half is still dirt, then Rabbi Yehuda would say, fine, if you touch the left half, you become tummy. But if, let's say, for example, only the front half had become flesh and the back half was still dirt, then in the second version, Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi is saying even Rabbi Yehuda wouldn't hold his tummy. So what's the difference between the versions? The version that refers Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi's statement to the Reisha, to the Tanakhama's opinion, well, then he would say, Kol shekein ha-seifa, all the more so on the seifa. The Tanakhama is being maple and saying that you're not tummy at all if you touch the dirt, whether it's the dirt that eventually is going to turn into flesh or not. And now Rabbi Yehuda is being more machmir. So clearly then, in that version, Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakhama Rabbi Yehuda explains that there can be a case where he touches the dirt and he'll be tame. So now we can say he's only going to be metame only if he shoots up nekuloi, only if the entire length of the animal at some point is flesh. So then we would say, in other words, Rabbi Shlomo ben Levi's statement had actually gone both parts of the Mishnah. Both the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda were only the metame, their respective parts only if hishritz al pnei kulay. Uman de masne la seifa, whereas the opinion that applies Rabbi Shlomo ben Levi's statement to the seifa, he would say, with so Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, he would say, avo reisha asnabalei hishritz, he would say, no, when it comes to the reisha, even if not hishritz al pnei kulay, nevertheless the Tanakhama, where the Tanakhama doesn't deal with the dirt at all, the Tanakhama just says if a person touches the flesh, then he's tame. So then in that second version, the Tanakhama would say that doesn't matter whether Hishu itself may fool it or not. Either way, the flesh part is going to be metame when the creature is dead. Now, let's talk about how b'chlal do we know that such a creature is metame in the first place. You know, as we've talked off and on throughout the Perek, the turtle is shmoina shirots in eight particular kinds of small creeping creatures, some of which have no legs, some of which have short legs. And now, one of them is the achbar, is the mouse, but we have to work out how we know that it includes this kind of mouse or mouse-like creature as well. So the Gemara says, Tanan, mitoch shenema achbar, Given that the Pasuk mentions Ahva, which is a mouse, or I mean, in a different Mephoshim talk about an Ahva, maybe more precisely a rat, or whatever, whatever, it's some kind of small rodent like that. So given that you have that word in the Pasuk, Shemeyan Yafil Ahva Shemayam, Shemay Ahva, then you would think, you would learn from that it means even the sea mouse, which after all is also called mouse. There's a sea mouse. I haven't seen anything specific. There is actually, you look up the word sea mouse, you will find there is a creature, there's some kind of a marine worm that's a marine invertebrate or whatever that bears that name. Whether that's the same sea mouse that the Gemara is referring to, I don't know. In any case, so you would think that that also, Shashmoyach, where the fact is it has the word mouse in its name. So maybe its dead body is Matame, dead body or part of it is Matame as well. So instead, we can learn now. The din hu, we can learn by vinyan av that it should be tahor, that it should not be metame. We have to remember most shrotzim are not metame, and nothing is metame when it's alive. The only thing that can ever be metame when it's alive is a person. But as far as shrotzim, most shrotzim, most invertebrates or creatures with short legs are not metame at all. A dead snake is not metame, a dead frog is not metame, etc. There's many, many other examples. There's only the eight that the Torah singles out. Now, fine, it's going to say that each of these eight may contain subspecies. Some of them, in fact, the Torah explicitly says, by at least one of them, the Torah says, Leminehu, according to its kind, which means that there are subspecies, subkinds within it. But in any case, the point is, so the Gemara says, we'll learn by Binyan Av that the sea mouse is not metame. In general, actually, there's a rule in Mishnayos that kol sheba yam tohar, anything that comes from the sea is not makabel tumah and does not transmit tumah either. So, like this, we would figure like this: tumah b'cholda. The Torah tells us one of the creatures that's metame when it's dead is a cholda. A cholda is also some kind of rodent. It's a weasel or a ferret or maybe a rat or whatever, some creature like that. Okay, so the Torah mentions the time achbar, and the Torah also tells us that an achbar is tome as well. Now, what the comparison is, now the cholder by definition grows on the land. The Gemara is going to explain soon on the next Amud that every creature that lives on land has an analog in the sea. And you have examples of them scattered throughout Shas. You have, for example, there's a cow on land, there's a creature called a sea cow. There's a horse on land, there's a sea horse. And so on. And the Gemara gives a couple of examples of them here and there in Shas. Actually, we had examples earlier in our Masechta. No, it wasn't in our Masechta, actually. It's in Masechta of Chazara, where the Gemara points out that, for example, the cow on land is a tahor animal, but the sea cow is a non-kosher animal, and vice versa with some other creatures. Anyway, so every creature that lives on land also has an analog on the sea, except for the fulda. So now, by definition, when the Torah says fulda, it means something that lives on land. Therefore, af achbar mina gadol al aretz. Therefore, of necessity, the achbar must also be something specifically that grows on the land. And therefore the sea mouse. So actually, explains it's some kind of fish which is called ahpa. So then we would say that the ahpa also, even though there is a type of ahpa that lives in the sea, nevertheless that lives in the sea in the water, nevertheless it's not going to be metame. But the Braisis continues, but maybe you have to go in a different direction. Maybe you should say the other way around. Tumi b'cholda v'tumi b'achbar. Maybe it's fine. Make a comparison between the cholda and the achbar, but say, do the binyan av the other way around. Ma cholda kol shesma cholda, where the cholda is any creature that bears the name cholda, is tame. As achbar kol shesma achbar. Maybe when it comes to achbar, any creature that bears the name Achbar is going to be Tomei, whether it lives on the land or in the river. So then it would be Achbar Achbar Shabayam, it's going to be even the sea mouse, Cheshmoy Achbar, which after all is called Achbar, Tamad Lemur, Al Haaretz. So in other words, so you can't necessarily learn it from Vinyan Av. It's a very common style in Brisis. We've had it a number of times just in our Perek alone. It comes out many, many times throughout Shas, and even more in the original Sifra and Sifri that it comes from, where it'll do that. We'll try to learn something using a different one of the Yud-Gil-Midis. We'll show you. Can't work it out for one reason or another, and therefore we have the pulse that tells us explicit words to tell us the din that we need to learn. So therefore, Satama Bema, Al Ha'aretz, therefore the pasuk says, this is Tomei for you among the Shrotzim that are on the land. So therefore, the Torah is clearly telling you that only what's on the land is Tomei. Okay, the Gemara says Iyala Aretz, fine, but if you're going to learn from the word Al Haaretz, Yocho Al Haaretz Yatame, maybe what it means is the carcasses of these animals are Matame, instead of you assuming that Al Haaretz teaches us where the animal lives. So if it lives on the land versus it lives in the water, maybe not. Maybe it means where the carcass of it is located right now. Yochal ala oretz yitame. Maybe it means that the dead bodies or parts of them, of these creatures, are matame only when they're on the land. But yoda layam lo yitame. But maybe if it's in the sea, then it's not matame anymore. No, Tamadim, Hashuritz. Therefore, the pasuk says, in connection with the Shuritzim, it says Hashuritz. It says Basheritz, Hashuritz al haoretz. The word Shuritz means that it moves around. So it means any place where it's able to move around. So these creatures are also, some of them are able to swim, some of them maybe not, but at least they thrash around in the water or whatever. So they would be included in the word hasheret, and therefore in fact they are metamic. Okay. Continues the Braisa though. Oh, eina ela hasheret yochokal mashut yitame. Maybe it means that any kind of creature that is created through period, another meaning of shirtet means to be produced by a male and a female. You find, for example, by the Jewish people in the sign, paru vayutitsu. So maybe we should argue that it includes only types of these shirtsim that are created from a male and female. So only those that are produced by male and female, that swarm in the normal way, yitame, then they should be metame. Same mashritz lo yitame, but if not, if they're produced by spontaneous generation, then they should not be metame. Which in that case, oti ach v'chetzi v'osir v'chetzi adama, in which case we would have to exclude this half flesh, half dirt mouse that we were talking about before, she'en part of the rubber, which is not produced from periodivity, it's spontaneously generated. So maybe, in other words, you're telling me the word hasheret comes to teach us that even a land creature that winds up in the water for whatever reason is still matame. Maybe not. Maybe that word hasheret is coming to tell us that over the shemona shnatzim only the ones produced by male and female, whether the female lays eggs, whether it gives birth to live young, but as opposed to this half flesh, half earth mouse, which is not produced by any of those processes. How do we know that? So the answer is again the dinhu. So again, we could try to learn it logically. We could say, like we said before, tumi b'chulda v'tumi b'achbar, because the Torah tells us that a chulda is tomei, first one on the list of the shmona shrotzim, v'tumi b'achbar, and it's also metame, and it's also, the Torah is also metame and achbar, which is third on the list, second. The chulda and the achbar are back to back, which is apparently why the Gemara is understanding that we can learn a binyan av from one to the other. So we can say the same thing, ma chulda kol hashma chulda. When it comes to chulda, anything called chulda is included. Af achbar kol hashma achbar. Then by the achbar, also anything called achbar. Well then, all the achbar shachetzi abasi vachetzi adama. Well then, this half flesh mouse is also called achbar. And therefore, so we shouldn't assume that it's excluded. In fact, Rashi points out it would be more likely to say that the word hashuritz is coming to be to add something to tell us that it includes the case of a land animal that wound up in the ocean, rather than to say. In other words, again, we said the word hashuritz can have two meanings. It can mean that it moves around, but it also can mean that it is produced from male and female. Well, our original assumption is that hashuritz means the first. So in that case, better we should assume that it means that even if the creature is in the water, it's still able to move around, then it's still matame. And rather than douching a new idea that the word sheretz should have a different meaning to be produced from male and female. So we should argue our original point. We shouldn't need a posit for it necessarily. We should indeed say that the sea mouse we've already established is not matame. But if a land mouse winds up in the sea, if it falls into the sea, it's still matame when it's dead. But we're not going to exclude the chetzi abasi, the chetzi adama, where we're going to have to take a different meaning of the word hashonetz. Now that's how Rashi has in front of us. The Maharam actually in the back of the Gemara tests. So why do we have to assume that Rashi is saying, in effect, that the Braisa is going back and forth? What is the meaning of Asherus? Whether it means to move around or whether it means to be produced from male and female. Why? I mean, after all, the Achba Shabayam, the sea mouse also moves around. And that way, they don't have to make so much of a machloek. So Maharam says that maybe the words true part of a rubber don't belong in Rashi. Maybe Rashi is not in fact saying that the difference is whether it's part of a rubber, whether it's produced from male and female, and therefore, in other words, the argument would still be that still from Hashurit, we would instead of taking out the chetzi or the chetzi bosser, the chetzi adama, maybe we'll say, as we said to begin with, that it means we should add in something that the Torah is telling us to add something, namely a land creature that falls into the water. So just like the Chulda is Tomei, and any creature called Chulda is Tomei, the same way when it comes to the mouse, anything called the mouse is going to be Tomei. So fine, we already excluded the sea mouse, but at least all the Achra, the Chetzi Bosa, the Chetzi Adama, we can at least include the mouse, which is half flesh and half dirt. So we shouldn't need a posse for that. But again, continues the price. Maybe though you could argue the other way around. You could argue machulda part of a rubber. A chulda is like most creatures; it's produced from male and female. So achva part of a rubber. Maybe also what type of achva is vatame? Only the kind that's part of a rubber. Only the kind that is produced from male and female, and maybe even after all, again, according to Maharam, according to the movies that we have in front of us in Rashi, maybe after all, we would include the Achra Shabayam, the sea mems. So how do we know that now? Tamad Lema Basheretz. Therefore, we can't learn it logically, and we have to instead learn it from the fact that the Torah says the word Basheretz among the Sheretz. So what it is the word Vasheretz teaches us that anything among the Shiratzim is Matami. So then why do we have the word Hashuritz? That would be, that tells us that a land creature that winds up in the ocean is still Tome, but on the other hand, one that grows in the ocean to begin with is not Matami. And then Tosfos adds the point that the word Hashoretz means anything that is mashmits, anything that moves around, and in that case, then it's more logical. So Hashoretz, rather, would more logically include anything that's part of a rubber, anything that's produced from male and female, and therefore we need the word Basheretz to tell us also the Achva Shechetzi Boser Vechetzi Adam. So we've worked out now in the Braisa the dinim, the relevant dinim from the Psukim, which is the Achbar on land is Matame, and it's Matame even if it winds up in the water. On the other hand, the one that grows in the water to begin with, the Achbar Shaliyam, is Tame. And then back on land, whether it's part of a rubber, whether it's produced from male and female, or whether it's the Achbar Shachetzi Abasa, the Chetzi Adama, either way it's Matame. Okay. So the Gemara asks now, one of the Chachamim asks Rabba, how do we understand this? Maybe we should learn instead, maybe the word Basheretz comes to teach us, fine, it comes to include the Achbar Shechetzi Basa Vachetzi Adama, and that's Matame. Hashoretz, then the word Hashoretz would be Tosu Soretz, would mean anything that's produced by male and female, and and then it would include, after all, even the Achva Shabayam, which is produced from male and female. So how do you know it's not that? And then after all, that one would be Matame. The E Mishum Al Ha'aretz, how are you going to say, but the Pasuk does say the words Al Ha'aretz. And you said before, that means only land creatures. So you could say, maybe Al Ha'aretz Yitame, Yorad Layam Layitame. Fine, maybe it means it's Matame, only when it's on the land and not on the sea, and not when it's in the sea. So in other words, the Sahum Rabbanan is asking, so far we've established three facts. Anything that lives on land is Matase, number one. Number two, that's true even if it falls into the water. That's four facts, I guess. Number three, But okay, so any Afro is Matambe, that we don't need a limud for, it says it in the pasuk. So fine, number one, we would say even if it falls into the sea, it's still Matambe. Number two, even if it is not part of a rubber, like the Afro, it's still Matambe. Number three, the one that lives in the sea to begin with, the sea mouse, is not Matambe. And we're learning that from the Psukim and the Braises. So now this Talmud Chacham is asking Rava that maybe we should learn the other way around. That one of them, we learn the Achba Shechetzi Vosser Vachetzi Adama will be Matare. But it has to be Shurit. So it has to be that the, but then it would include not only that, but also anything else that is born from male and female, and then after all, the Achba Shebiyam would be Matame. What would not be Matame is a land animal that fell into the water. Amalei. Amalei, so Rava answers, and the reason we don't do that is if you're going to argue that the sort of sea is also a place of chumma, you're going to argue that even the creatures that grow in the sea, sea mouse, for example, are going to be metame. Mali hocha, then what's the difference whether the creature is in the sea or whether it comes out? Are you going to argue that the rule is anything that's right now on land is going to be metame. Anything that's right now in the sea is not going to be metame. You don't do that. You don't douche in that way. So therefore, it's more likely the drosha in the braisa is the one that makes more sense. It's not the distinction between something is metame on land and automatically that same thing is not metame when it goes into the water, because then you would have to argue the other way around as well. You'd have to argue the one that's in the water is not metame when it's in the water, the sea mouse. But if you take it out of the water on the land, then it's going to be metame. It doesn't work that way.
If it's a lower form of
science. So the Gemara says, V'hai ala oretz. But what are you telling me, though? You're telling me that from the word ala ha'oretz, we're learning that the preacher has to actually live on land in order to be metame, and therefore we said that excludes the Achra Shabayam, the sea mouse. Now the question is, why? The question is that we need those words, ala ha'oretz, for a whole different direction. The words al ha'aretz come to exclude a case where you have a tumah floating on the surface of the water and you have a suffix whether you touched it or not. Now we have like this. There's a usual rule in halacha that when a person is suffix whether he became tumah, in this case, for example, is a dead sheriff, so he's not sure if he touched it, the usual rule is we distinguish between whether it's in Rishus HaYochid or Rishus HaRabin, because we mentioned in many places in Shas, then Rishus HaYochid will assume Misafik that he's Tomei, and Rishus HaRabin will assume Misafik he's Tahar. We learn that from different Psukim in different places in Shas. But now there's a special kind of thing called Tumat Safa. When you have a Tumat that's floating on the surface of the water, then we learn it. We learn from these words al ha'aretz that it means that now on the one hand you have the word hashoretz, which implies that no matter where it's moving around, no matter where it moved around, it's tamei, whether it's on the land or the water, like we were just saying. On the other hand, you have al ha'aretz, which teaches us that when it's on the water, there's a case when a person's not tamei, even when it's a suffet, and even when it's in rishus yachid, namely when it's floating on the water. So we use the word al ha'aretz for that. So how are we also using it now to say that how are we also using it now? The words al ha'aretz tell us that it means any creature that lives on the land, whether it's part of a rover or not, and to exclude the achbar shabayam, which is not. And the answer is Amar Rabbi Sfarav Dini al ha'aretz. Because that's exactly what Rabbi Sfarav Dini tells us. Al ha'aretz lahotzi safek tuma safa. That the words al ha'aretz come to exclude that case where a person has a safek, whether we touch the floating tuma. I think one answer is Tarti al ha'aretz k'sivi, because in fact there's two places in the pasuk in connection with Shratzim where it says the word al ha'aretz. So from one of them we can learn that drasha, and from the other one we can learn our drasha over here about which kinds of achbar are and aren't metame. So that covers that. That's how we know that the achbar shechetzi avosim chetzi adama, even though its life cycle is very different from that of regular mice, nevertheless it's a land animal and therefore it's still metame. And again, it's still metame. It's still metame, even if it goes into the water. He points out, after all, we do need also the word Hashoretz, which means Cholmok Mishashoretz, wherever it's able to move around, and that way, in other words, otherwise we would think we're excluding two things. Maybe we'd say the Achra Shoryan is not Matame, and neither is a land Achra when it winds up in the water. So like this, so the word Hashoretz tells us that no, a land Achra that winds up in the water is nevertheless still Matame. So now, So now let's talk more about the shrutzin and about the various subspecies of shrutzin. The Gemara says, "Turn around, Bonner. We learn in a brisa. The part after Acholah va'Achra, the pasuk continues and says Hatsov l'minayu. The next thing that the pasuk mentions is the tsov according to its kind. What a tsov is. I mean, in modern Hebrew tsov means a turtle. Not necessarily does it mean it here in this pasuk. Rashi translates it as a French word, froyet, or something like that, and he says it resembles a frog. So it sounds like Rashi is referring to a toad or something, although there are different other possibilities that they bring up what Rashi himself may mean, and then there are different other mephoshim as well who discuss what exactly the sub is. There are Gemaras that seem to imply it. It's definitely some kind of animal fairly closely related to the frogs, or some kind of amphibian or something, because the Gemara elsewhere talks about that you can have, for example, a creature where you're not sure if it was a sub. You're not sure if it was a tsav or a frog. So there's definitely reason to argue that it means that it means something like that, like a toad or something. But there are in fact different understandings about it. There are Rishonim who translate it as a ferret, and even Rashi's word froyet might also be a ferret, and there's a couple of other possibilities. So in any case, so the pasuk is that sov l'minehu, but sov according to its species. So l'chavi ha'arvad, that comes to include also a creature called an arvad. Now we have the word in front of us. We have the word ayin resh vav dalid, and there are places in Shas where that actually refers to a wild donkey. But that's not what we're referring to over here. A wild donkey is definitely not a sheretz. So Mephoshim explain that there are two creatures that are spelt the same in Lashon Kodesh, but are pronounced differently. You have aroid, which means a wild donkey, but here the word is really arvod, and that refers to, as the Gemara is going to explain soon, it's a hybrid of a toad or whatever itself is, and a snake. Now a snake is not one of the Shemona Shrotzim, a dead snake is not the Tamek. But now when it says that Sokhami Nehu, Lahovi Ha Arvad, it comes to include also the Arvad. Kitchen Kubetsis points this out, which, in other words, it's not a purebred sov, but nevertheless it has enough sov in it from its ancestry to be considered in the subspecies of sov, and therefore that dead body is metami. So the Gemara is going to explain soon that you have, it's an unusual thing. Usually species don't false mate, and even if they do, they don't usually bear live young, but here the Gemara says this is kind of an exception to the rule. Anyway, v'chein hanefilim, or on the side it says it's supposed to be v'en hanefilim, and also the ben hanefilim. Now nefilim here, we have in Chumash, nefilim means giants, but again that's not what it means over here. The nefilim or the ben hanefilim is some kind of small creature, so some other kind of sheretz, which is also in the category of tzav. The salamandra, and then a third one that's included is the salamandra. Salamandra is like the word salamander in English, which is a type of lizard, but the Gemara explains in other places that this is a lizard that has special properties. It grows in fire, as the Gemara is going to mention soon. You have to have like a fire burning for 7 years, and then a salamandra will come out of it, and the creature is fireproof. The creature is fireproof itself, and in fact its blood has the property of making a person able to be fireproof as well. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that Ahaz, one of the kings of Yehuda, who was a terrible Rasha and worshipped Avodah Zarah and did all kinds of other bad things, at one point he wanted to sacrifice his son, Chizkiyahu, to the Moloch Avodah Zarah, which involved passing him through fires and he might get burned. So ahead of time, Chizkiyahu's mother smeared him with blood from the salamandra creature. And that way he survived the ordeal. But also all of those, Tzav, and the Nephilim, and the Ben and Nephilim, whatever, and Salamandra are all various types of reptiles or whatever, which are all in the category of Tzav. And the Gemara says, an interesting point is the Gemara elsewhere mentioned. So Rashi over here says it's created by Kishuv, it's created by magic. But there are other places where Rashi just says it comes from a fire that's burning for 7 years and doesn't mention anything about magic. So the Roga Trevor actually says anything that's created in an unusual way can be called Kishuv. It's not actually technically Kishuv. It can be produced naturally, but nevertheless it's called Kishuv in the sense like nobody really understands it. Sofer gives a different point about it. He says that this is a creature that loves the heat. So it sometimes it can come out naturally, but you can have also sorcerers, people, magicians are able to bring it out with their kishuf by creating the appropriate habitat for it. Again, since it likes heat, then they'll make a fire for it in the same place for a long time. So in any case, all of those again are included in the category of tzav. And the Gemara says, when Rabbi Akiva would reach this pasuk where it describes his shmoni shiratzim, and specifically when it mentions tzav l'minehu, and we're saying the minehu includes so many different creatures that live in completely different habitats, Oimer, he used to say, as his pasuk says, Tilim mor rabu masach Hashem, how great and how amazing are your works, Hashem. Yeshlecha b'riyas zelus v'yam, you have creatures that Hashem made to naturally live in the water, the Yeshul Chabrias Fidelis Biabosha, and you have ones that live on dry land, Shabayam Ilmolo Olis Biabosha Miyad Mesis. So you have the ones that live on this in the sea. If they come up onto the dry land, they're right away going to die. They have to live in the sea. Shabayabosha Ilmolo Yodis Bayam Miyad Mesis. The ones on land, if they go into the sea, they're right away going to die. Okay, some of them are paddle around for a little bit, but basically they can't live in the water. Then you have even creatures that grow in the fire, such as the salamandra. And you have creatures that grow in the air. The ones that live in fire, if you put them in a normal atmosphere, they'd right away die. And the ones in the air, if they were to go into fire, they would right away die. So you really have, Baruch Shah points out, you have over here, to be exact, all the four different basic elements of the universe: Eshmaim, Ruach, Ofer, fire, wind, water, and Eretz and Earth. So here you have every creature is a composite of all these four. That Amman points out that you don't have anything which is entirely one of these Yesodis. But nevertheless, here you have each one of them is a composite of all of them. But Hashem still gave each one its particular element in which it lives, and they can't switch it around. Each one retains its nature and can't transcend it. So he says, Mar Rabo Masach Hashem, so Rabbi Akiva would finish off in amazement, how wondrous are your works at them, that you make so many different types of creatures, some of them even set subspecies of the same creature, and each of them have such completely different living habits. So talking about water versus land animals, and we said before that the choled, which is the first on the list of the Shemoneh Shratzim, which has been called by the feminine form Cholda, is a creature where there's no water equivalent of it. It's only a land creature. So the Gemara said, "Tana Rabbanan, Kosh Yesh B'Yavash Yesh B'Yan." Any creature that you have on the dry land, you also have a parallel to it in the water. With the exception of the Cholda, however we translate Cholda exactly. Omer Abzeir, my crop. Here's a pasuk that expresses that, hints at that idea. The pasuk says, "Hazinu kol yoshve choled." The pasuk until them says, "Listen, pay attention, all you who live in choled." So the dry land, the dry land where people live, is called choled because that's the exclusive place where the choled lives. So in other words, there's every other creature. There's a sea analog of it, but not the choled that lives only on land. One interesting point the Shalar Kaddish mentions is that the choled is a symbol of the Yetzirah. And that you find only on land, in the sense that we talk about sometimes, there's places in Kabbalah and Chassidus where it talks about the dry land versus the sea represents the revealed world, Alma de Scalia, that we live in, versus Alma de Scassia, the hidden world of Elikos. So now, in Kedusha, there's no analog to the Yetzirah, therefore that's represented by the point that here, there's no analog to the Hulda in the sea. But every other creature, Zelo, Mazel, Sele, Kim, Hashem made one opposite the other, and therefore it has its analog in, and therefore it has its analog in higher levels of Kedusha. So in this connection, the Gemara says, Omar Avuna Brei Rav Yeshua, Bivri de Neresh Einen Min HaYishuv. The Bivri of Neresh, Neresh is the name of a place in Lavo, are not part of the settled world. What does that mean? It actually says the word Bivri is like the word beavers in English. So it means the beavers that live in the area of Neresh, they are not from the settled part of the world. In other words, they don't grow. They grow and they live only in the water. But what would be the relevance of that? Rashi explains it would mean, in other words, that so Rashi just says that. So Tosfos brings from Rashi an additional point that it would mean actually that therefore if a person were to eat a piece of a beaver, then in the, like this, a beaver is a non kosher animal. But you have different types of non kosher animals where there are different isurim for them in the Torah. And if Beis Din is going to give a person malchus for it, there has to have been proper hasra. There has to have been a proper warning of which aveira he's going to be transgressing, by it. So now, Tosfos quoting Rashi explains that what it means is now if a person were to eat from a beaver, then it wouldn't be considered a sheretz ala aretz. It wouldn't be considered a land animal, and therefore he wouldn't get if they wound him. Don't eat this creature because it's a land animal. Then he wouldn't. Then he wouldn't get malchus for it. And you would have to warn him that he's going to eat a sheretz hamayim, that he's eating a creature that grows in the water. So that's Einan Min HaYishuv. They don't live in the settled area. That's a point of Rashi. Tosfos has a different gusa and a whole different understanding. Tosfos explains the word is not bivri din neresh, but rather bivri vin neresh. Bivri, that is the name of a place, which the Gemara elsewhere mentions, a place near Neresh. So the word would be Bivri and Neresh are Einan Min HaYishuv. They're not of the settled part of the world, meaning, in other words, that the people of there are uncivilized and bad people, as the Gemara is going to go on to say now. So the connection would be, what's the connection then? Tosfos says, we just said this expression, Hazino Ko Yoshve Choled, which means that everybody who lives on the settled land, which is called Choled, and by the way, Maharsha points out, you know, that if you look at the context of that capital Memtes, is talking about a person shouldn't trust in his wealth, don't think I'm wealthy and therefore I'm invulnerable. Realize that, for example, you live only on land. What happens if there's a mabul? Then you have no place to live, unlike other creatures, where again, you know, they can't live in the water. Fine, but at least they have analogs in the water, but there's no analog to a person. There's no person who can live indefinitely in the water, and therefore, in other words, don't trust in your wealth. Realize you have to be on good terms with Hashem and follow His mitzvot. Anyway, so now Tosfos says that's the connection. They're saying that people are supposed to be Yoshvei Cholad. They're supposed to be living and civilized in Hashem's world, and here, meanwhile, these people of Bivri and Neresh are not. They're not included in the category of Yoshvei Cholad. They barely deserve to be called human beings because they're such a Lashon. So the Gemara continues, Amar Papa, the Shamta Neresh, the city of Neresh ought to be in Shamta, which is a severe form of Cherem, Tarbe Mashke Bahalisim, both the fat, the skin and the fat tail, in other words, everybody small and great, everybody in Neresh, all Rishoyim. Now, Rav Popper himself is actually from Neresh, and in fact, he established a yeshiva over there, So apparently what he means is, and maybe Fakir, because the place is so corrupt, therefore he felt that's the place that more than any other place could use in yeshiva in order to raise the standard of the citizens. Much like in the Pesukim, you know, here we have in our parasha, for example, Moshe Rabbeinu is criticizing the Jewish people and telling them that Mamrim Hayisim and Hashem, you've always been rebellious against Hashem, and then so forth, and yet we know that they were the Dur Dea, they were the greatest generation and in many ways in our history, and they learned Torah full time, and they're the ones who actually experienced Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah and all those things. So in other words, it means relative to what they could have been, they're rebellious or whatever. It could be in the same sense over here when Papa is putting down these people of Neresh. Look, if any of us were to meet them, nowadays, then we would be overawed by what great people they were. But relative to what they could have been, Rav Papa is putting them down and saying they're uncivilized and they deserve to be in the Seder. In any case, Mao Shaw says, actually, the connection is also like this. We're saying, what are we saying? The point is, again, pulling the word cholad is meant to hint to a person, don't try to just amass more and more and more wealth. Realize that one marble could come and sweep the whole thing away. So now he's saying the people of Neresh are like that as well. They deserve to be swept away by water like that, and therefore, Ein Min HaYishuv, they're not part of the settled land. They're not part of the area that can be called cholad. And in fact, so all of it should be a nidu, he says. And in fact, the Papa says another thing about it. You have a pasuk in Yirmiyah where the Navi warns the people, Eretz, Shimi Dvar Hashem. Land, listen to the word of Hashem. And in chat, in context, he's referring to the land of Eretz Yisrael, of the people over there, and telling them to listen to the word of Hashem and do tshuva. But now, the Omer HaPapa, the Papa says, it's also... So here, the Navi is speaking to the whole land, to the whole world, and yet, like Ova Neresh, Shmaya Dvar Hashem, Ova Neresh refused to hear the word of Hashem, and they remain Rishoyim. So Mao Shaw says that's the connection also. In other words, here, everybody else at least keeps in mind, at least in time, at least sometimes, that they live on the land, and they better make sure the land remains land and doesn't get swept away by a marble. And here, the people of Neresh don't pay attention to that. They don't realize that they're on Oretz, and that's the only place they can live, and they better shape up. Okay. Speaking of Neresh and the corruption of the people over there, so the Gemara says, Amar of Gidol Amar Rav, now Shah Nashkah. If a person from Neresh gives you a kiss, sat money kahal, then you better afterwards count your teeth, because there's such ganovim that if you're not careful, he could steal your teeth right out of your mouth. Now, there are other places in Bavel as well that had such problems. So Rav Gidol continues, Nahar Pekudah, Lavya, if a person from Nahar Pekud, another city in Bavel, if he accompanies you on the way, then you should know that he's not doing it because he wants you to be safe on the way. Migliva Shapira, the Chazi Allah, it's because he sees a nice garment on you and he plans to steal it, so watch your back. And Pumpadisha, Levoyach, and if a person from Pumpadisha, another city in Bavel, accompanies you, Ashni Ushbizach, change the place, the plan to stay in a different place tonight than you were going to originally, because otherwise he's going to know where you're staying and he's going to come steal from you. So in other words, these places were saying Neresh, Nahar Pekud, and Pumbedisa, there were many ganovim and many corrupt people over there, and you've got to watch yourself around them. Again, Kumbadisya in particular had one of the biggest yeshivas of Bavel for hundreds of years. So again, the idea would be maybe precisely because of that, because the people over there are of such low moral quality relative to what they should have been, is why the Chachamim established their yeshivas over there in order to raise them up. We mentioned before about the Aravad. We said before that the Torah says that Sod, that it's subspecies. We said that includes a creature called the Aravad. So let's talk about that now. So the Gemara says, Omer Rav Huna bar Tursa, Pam achas halakti l'Vad. One time I went to Vad, which is the name of a place. And the people over there would reshoyim him, and in particular they would cross green animals when they're not allowed to. Jews are definitely not allowed to do it in the Torah, and there's even an opinion in the Gemara Sanhedrin that goyim are not allowed to either. Anyway, so Rav Huna bar Tursa says, one time I visited this place, Ra'isi nochash shu koruch alaf tzav. I saw a snake that was constantly associated with a female tzav, and they're having relations. L'yomim yotza arvad m'minehem. Eventually, an arvad was born from this false mating. So what happened? So how does such a creature come to be? Yochshabosid, this name of Shimon HaChosid. So Rav Huna bar Tursa says, when I came before Rav Shimon HaChosid, who was his Rebbe, Omali, he says, you know why Hashem made that happen? Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu means, in effect, Hashem is saying that the people of this place, Heim Heviu Bria Shaloi Barasi Barlami, they brought into the world creatures that I didn't create, because they're cross-breeding animals, which the Torah says they're not allowed to do. So I'm going to cause that they're also going to get affected and attacked by a creature that I didn't create in my world, this Aravad, which is a very dangerous type of snake, and it's going to harm them. Marshall explains actually differently. So Rashi is saying Vad is the name of a place where people were doing this kind of crossbreeding, and Hashem says, therefore, Davka, in that place in the world, I'm going to cause a natural crossbreeding like that without them doing it, and it's going to create this very dangerous creature in Aravad. Maharsha explains differently. Vad means actually the vad actually means, as it usually does, the place where the Chachamim gathered, means that they're gathering together and they're discussing the fact that in Chumash Bereishis and Parshas Vayishlach it mentions a fellow over there named Anna who created the first mule, which is the same thing, which is also a coarse reed, which is not allowed. And therefore, again, Hashem is saying you're creating creatures that don't exist in nature, and I'm also going to create creatures that don't exist in nature. So in other words, according to that, it's not that Rav Huna Bar Tosa actually saw people engaging in horse breeding, but rather he saw this example of a snake and a sov mating, and he went to talk to his Rebbe and asked him how does such a thing come about. And then his Rebbe tells him, because Hashem already said long ago when this Anna from Parshas Vayishlach first created the first mule, that this is how it's going to be now. Hashem is also going to cause harmful hybrids to be in the world. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? How does such a thing come in the first place? Va'amamah, we learn in a Braisa, in the Sefer Bechoros, we'll learn it in a few weeks, Be'ez Hashem. Kol shetashmishin ve'iboran shava, any creatures that mate in the same way. Now, most creatures, as we're going to learn over there, usually mate with the male's front, with the male's front to the female's back. And then you have a few creatures, human beings among them, who mate face to face. So any creatures that face in the same way when they're mating, when they're having relations, the iburon and their pregnancy, the length of their pregnancy, shava is the same thing. Yodin magadlin zemize. They're able to interbreed and have children with one another, and they're also able to nurse from one another. So in other words, let's say, for example, a horse and a donkey, they both mate front to back, and they both have the same length of pregnancy. Therefore, it's possible to hybridize a horse and a donkey and get a mule. But the Braisa continues, V'choshein tashmishan v'ibun an shava, when their way of mating is different, or when their pregnancy is different, any yodin a magadlan zemezer, they won't be able to have children with one another, the genetics are too different, and they won't be able to nurse one another's babies because the milk or whatever is too different. Now, so the question is, a snake, the Gemara tells us there in Bechoros, is pregnant for 7 years. As opposed to a tsav, Rashi points out a tsav is pregnant for only 6 months. So how could a snake and a tsav hybridize in the first place? And the answer is Amarab Nes Besef Nes. So the answer is it was a nest within a nest. First of all, snakes and most creatures are not usually attracted to anything outside their own species. So the very fact that it was attracted to something from a different species is itself something unusual. And then on top of that, the fact that they were actually able to produce live young, which violates that rule in the Braisa and Bechoros, is a nest within that. What do you mean? What are you calling it a nest? What fact that you have such a creature in existence is a punishment because an arvad is a very, very dangerous type of snake. So the answer is that's what he means. My nest, safe nest, the puronos. He means that it's a nest, a safe nest, to create puronos, to create punishment for the world. So in other words, precisely that. You have these people of Vav, according to Rashi, who are hybridizing animals where they shouldn't. Or, according to Maharsha, harking back to this Anna and other people like him, who hybridize and create mules and things like that. Then Hashem, Zavka, does a nest, safe nest, to create creatures that then can be used to punish them. Fine. The Mishnah says, getting back to matters of Tumur Tara and Nevela and all that, the Mishnah says, a limb of an animal or a piece of flesh of an animal, which are loosely hanging off the animal. We've learned about this concept of Ndodolin earlier in the Masechta, where you can have a limb or a part of flesh that's mostly torn away from the animal, but it's still partially attached, still a little bit attached. It's so far torn off that it's not going to regenerate. Now we're mentioning an Ava and we're mentioning flesh. The Gemara is going to work out, so we're going to work out in the Gemara over the next couple of days that there are certain differences between them as far as the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara. The difference is that an Ava means a complete limb which contains both of a gidim ma'atzomis, flesh and gidim and bones, whereas boser means just flesh without the other things. So those things, I'm the dolim b'behema. So now if a person plans, now you're not allowed to get, now they're considered avim and a high. So nobody would be allowed to eat them. Nevertheless, if a person had in mind that he's going to give it to eat to a goy, why a goy? A goy's not allowed to eat it either. Tosfos Yomtov points out, as a practical matter, who are you going to find who's going to be more likely to be willing to eat such a thing would be a goy. Really, if the goy knows better, he wouldn't eat it, because they're high, but you're more likely to find him. So let's say you plan to give it to a goy to eat. Then Matame and Tumas Earth and Mimakaiman, that even now, when it's in its place, it's already Matame the Tumah of food. So now, in other words, for example, a dead sheretz or whatever source of Tumah touches this Aver, then it will already become, then it'll already have Tumas Earthlin, it'll already be Tumah as food and able to be Matame other food. With Srich and Heksher, however, it does require Heksher, it does require to be wedded with one of the Shiva Mashkin. So it has to be after it was loosened from the rest of the animal. So in other words, Rashi points out it won't be matame itself. It actually has to be detached from the animal itself. We'll learn on other days in order to be matame tumas nevela. So right now it itself is not matame. However, it can become tame to that extent. It's considered food that it can become tame from a dead sheretz or whatever. On the other hand, if Srich and Heksher, it does require to be wedded with one of the shiva mashkin. Because Rashi points out, you can't say tumah chamura. You can't. We have a rule that we've learned earlier that when you have something sofer the tamik tumah chamura, that's something that is going to end up giving off a tumah chamura, a strong kind of tumah, doesn't require heksher. But the difference is, if you hear the fact is, that may not come to tumah chamura. What happens if he shechts the animal? And as we learned earlier in the Masechta, if he shechts it, then this you may not be able to eat this limb, but nevertheless, it won't be considered that it fell off, it won't be considered Eiv Menachai, and it won't be considered Nevela. So it's not necessarily that it's actually going to ever have tumah chamura, and therefore now we have to consider it just like food, and food requires wedding, was one of the Shiva Mashkim, in order to be susceptible to tumah. The Mishnah continues, Mishchata Behema, what happens if you do shech the animal with this piece still attached? So then, Hukshrub Dameha, then you have the fact that blood came out of the animal when it was shechted, causes the meat now to be Mukshrub Kabal Tumah. Now it's susceptible to Tumah. Divrei Rav Meir, that's what Rav Meir says. Rav Shimon Emeloi Hukshrub, Rav Shimon says that they're not Mukshrub Kabal Tumah, you're going to need to wet them with something else again. Now Rashi points out again this aver of basa hamadoldolim, you're not going to be allowed to eat them after the shechita. We said this is part of a basa lasada tzreifa. However, we said that at least they won't have tumas nevela. So now though, but Rav Meir says you don't need another heksher. The blood itself is machsher it. Whereas Rav Shimon holds that it still does need a separate heksher. As we'll learn in the Gemara, why you have that distinction. The Mishnah continues, Mesa Behema, what happens if instead of being shechted, if the animal died without shechita? Habosar, so the meat, this limb will not be considered Tumas Nevela, because it'll be considered it won't be considered Tumas Nevela, because Rashi explains, again, because it's called Misa Oisin Nipple. When it dies, it's considered as though that limb already fell off while it was alive. So therefore, so it's not part of the Nevela. So it won't have Tumas Nevela. However, it's sort of heksher. So it won't have tumas nevela, but it still does need heksher. It does need to be mukshel kabel tuma. It does need to be wedded with one of the shiva mashkim after it was torn loose. So in other words, again, it's not going to be considered part of the nevela. It's going to be considered that it's separated from the animal while it's alive. The point being, in other words, therefore, that flesh, the aver as a whole is going to be metame for a different reason, because it's called aver menachai. But what about, in other words, if now you have, if you cut off a piece of flesh from it, that piece of flesh will not be metame, because that's only flesh that's considered to have come off a living thing, and therefore that's not metame, as we're going to work out in the Gemara the next couple of days, Mr. Jen. So now if the animal dies, it doesn't, the piece that was half off is not going to be nevela, and it requires heksher, and then it's roi lekabel tumah. Eva matame mishum eva menachai, however, the limb as a whole will be matame as a limb from a living animal, because it's considered that it fell off before the animal died. The ain matame mishum eva nevela. However, it will not be matame as an aver of a nevela. Now, the difference being, in other words, the Gemara is going to explain, which we'll learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, what the difference is between them, but basically the difference boils down to, again, if you have boser, if you have flesh that's taken off it, will that have a tumor of its own? If it's nevela, yes, any kazayis of a nevela is matame. If it's eiv menachai, then no. Give it a mayor, that's what a mayor says. Reb Shimon says it's altogether, and he's altogether matahar, as we'll learn in the Gemara in the next couple of days, Be'ez Hashem, what Reb Shimon means and why he would say it's tahar. Okay. So in other words, again, you have this Eva v'habasa hamdodolin. What we're saying is, while the animal is still alive, it's capable already of being considered food if you had in mind that you were going to feed it to somebody such as a goy. Whether it needs hechsher to be makabel trumah, we're saying then there's a difference between whether it was shechted or whether the animal died naturally. If it was shechted, then it definitely won't be nevela anymore. It will be also to eat, but it won't be nevela. And whether it's mukshav makabel trumah by virtue of the shechita blood that you have the machlokas or meir and Reb Shimon, and then if the animal instead dies without shechita, then we're saying it definitely requires hechsher, as we're gonna see in the Gemara, what the difference is, why it should require hechsher in that case, not the case of the shritta, and there are different dinim as far as a limb that comes off it, depending on the limb itself is going to be considered Eiv Menachai and not Nevela, according to the Meir and according to the Shimon, neither of the above. So the Gemara says, Tumas Eichon Ein, Tumas Nevela Loi. Now, in the first case of our Mishnah, where where it's middle dolin, where it's half off the animal, and we're saying that it can have tumas oichlin. So the Mishnah is saying only tumas oichlin, tumas nevela loy, but to be matame as a nevela, apparently not. To be exact, Tosfos says really the tumah of eiv menachai to be exact. Well, heichidami. Well, what's the scenario? Idim malin arucha. If it's not so detached, if it's only partially detached and could conceivably regenerate and heal and rejoin the animal's body. So then, the Tumas Oichlin Nami Lo Matame, then it shouldn't be Matame, as Tumas Oichlin either. An animal is never Matame when it's alive. It's never capable of becoming Matame when it's alive. The Ida in Malin Arucha, if you're talking about that it's so far off, that it's so far detached that it's never going to regenerate, Tumas Nevela Nami Lo Matame, then it should be Matame, with Tumas Nevela as well. Why is the Mishnah telling us that not? So the answer is la'olam de'en malan arucha. In fact, we are talking about where it won't regenerate, it won't heal. The shiny tumas nevela. Tumas nevela is a special case. The rachmana amav chi yipo. The pasuk says if the nevela of an animal falls onto food. Now, why does it say if it falls? It doesn't matter whether it falls or touches or whatever. Certainly, ad chi yipo. From there, we can learn that it means only when it actually falls off. Only when it falls off, either when the animal as a whole dies and falls down, or when something of it. Or when it falls off the animal completely. Rashi points out the actual context of that pasuk. It's talking about shrotzim, where there, by a sheretz, you have, as we're going to learn later on, that a limb from a live sheretz is also matame, even though a live animal is not matame, but if a limb comes off a sheretz, then it is in fact matame. Same thing with an animal. Actually, we said an eiv menachai from an animal is also matame, and therefore, we see that only when it falls off, and we also understand this point that we learned earlier in the Masech, the misa oisin nipple, when the animal dies, then it's considered as though this piece fell off, and therefore is considered eiv menachai. Tosfos discusses this, and that's Tosfos reiterates and then explains more clearly what Rashi says, that the fact that you have two different limudim over here is that the effect. So Tosfos actually learns a slightly different limud. So you have two different ways of learning this concept. That on the one hand, when the piece actually falls off, and number two, that when the animal dies, it's considered as though it fell off at that time. So we are talking about, though, that Ein Mala Arucha, we're talking about it was so badly detached from the animal's body that it's not going to regenerate. Okay. So now the Gemara says, back to the Tumas Tah, back to the Hochin. Nevertheless, even though it's considered attached, so the Gemara says, Tani Nami Hochin. In fact, we learn like that in the Braisa, however, Vavasam, the Dolan Bebehema, when you have a limb or a piece of flesh that is hanging off an animal, Umu'urim, but they're still attached. Even a hair's width Now, they're certainly not going to regenerate like that, but nevertheless, they still are attached. Yochu yitamot tumas nevela. You would think they should have the tumah of nevela. Tamad lema v'chiyipo ad shiyipo. So therefore, the positive says yipo, so only if it actually falls off. Okay, so the Braise is saying exactly what we said, exactly what we explained on Mishnah to the same. So the Gemara says, "Vafilo hofi tumas osim mitandu." Now, evidently, then the Mishnah is saying that. That not evidently, it's very clear. The Mishnah is saying it still is able to have tumas osim. Now, why is that? Mesayle that of chiyah ba'ashi. That point that we derive, that we see in the Mishnah, supports the point that of chiyah ba'ashi says. The Amr of chiyah ba'ashi amashmul. He was another example. The same way as a living animal or a limb attached to a living animal is not able to be makabel tuma. The same thing you have as far as a tree or a plant, for example, which is still attached to the ground. Then the it and the fruits on it are not makabel tuma either. But the Amr of chiyah ba'ashi amashmul te'enim shatsamku bi'ibehem. If figs dried out while they're still attached to the tree, the tamas tumas oislin, then they will be able to contract tumas oislin. To that extent, we're going to consider as though they're detached from the tree. They're still physically attached, but since they dried out, then they're considered as though they're detached again, because they're not going to regenerate. And batolish man b'shabbos. On the other hand, if a person pulls them off the tree on Shabbos, chayav chatos, then he's going to be chayav. Then you're going to be chayav achatos because they're still attached to the tree, and therefore it's considered harvesting on Shabbos. So we see, in other words, that it's sort of an in-between state. On the one hand, it's mekabel tumas oslin. It's considered as though it's already detached. On the other hand, when it comes to Shabbos, then we're still saying there's going to be chayav for pulling them off the tree. Rashi actually points out, still, what we have to have is, though, that the stems didn't also dry out. If the stems also dried out, then in fact it wouldn't be also d'oraisa to pull them off. And the reed explains the reason is because when they're so dry, if you just shake the tree, they'll fall right off. So therefore, Rashi learns that if the stems are dry as well, then he would be potter from a chatos. So we also know the Rambam learns differently, that he would actually be chayav in that case as well. Tosfos points out that's the main thing that we're proving from this braisa, the fact that we're saying that that if a person pulls them off the tree on Shabbos, is going to be chayav chatos. So we see, in other words, that it's sort of that in-between state that's considered partially detached and partly not. So that supports, so that's that point, that Rabchia ba'at, that Rabchia, that point that Rabchia Ba'ashi is telling us is implied from our Mishnah, where we see that's also kind of in that hybrid state of having Tumas Oslin but not Tumas Nevelus. So whereas Rashi learns that the main thing is we see that it's Matama Tumas Oslin, which was the point that Shmuel made. Okay. The Gemara says, "Leima Masayle the Shmuel." Leima Masayle. Can we say that we can also support Shmuel's din from another place, which would be relevant? In other words, in case we find some way of slogging up this proof, then at least we have a different. So, according to Rashi, again, we're saying that we proved Shmuel's first din from our Mishnah, and now we want to see if there's another. Braisa that also supports what Shmuel is saying. According to Tosfos, we want to more prove Shmuel's second point that they're still considered attached as far as Hilchos Shabbos. So Braisa says, Yerokas Shetzamku Bi'Ivegen, vegetables that dried up while they're still attached to the ground, you're going to Kruva Dwas, for example, cabbage or pumpkins, Ein Metamen, Tumas Oslin, though they're not able to become Tomei, Tumas Oslin, because they're not edible. So in other words, unlike, for example, the figs that dried out on the tree, you can eat dried figs, you can't really eat dried cabbage or dried pumpkin. And Rashi points out, they're like wood, they're not roy to eat. On the other hand, cut some the yibshon, but on the other hand, if you cut them when they were still fresh and then you dried them, a tam and tumas oslin, then they would have tumas oslin. So now we have to ask, what does the braisa mean? Cut some the yibshon, sakadaiva. What do you mean if you cut them and you dried them? The fact is, if you dried them, eitz v'almahu, they were still back to the problem. They're like wood, they're not edible anymore. You don't dry cabbage, you don't dry pumpkins. So why would they be considered food? Rabbi Yitzchok explained, means he cut them having in mind that he's going to dry them. So he didn't actually dry them yet, but he intends to do that. So let's say, for example, Rashi explains, why would he do that? Is let's say, for example, he wants them for firewood or for some other things like that. Let's say he has too many cabbages. He doesn't need them. So now in the case of the pumpkin or the gourd, Rashi points out a more practical thing. You could make a kavi from it. We find in many places in Chas where they would use the hollow shells of pumpkins and gourds to make various kinds of kavim. And in the case of the pumpkin, fine. And in the case of the cabbage, fine. It would mean that he plans to use it for firewood. And nevertheless, we're still saying that. So then we're saying that that's metamic to masarikla. So what does that mean? Timed akruvud lasu. So why are we saying only specifically? Why are we mentioning specifically cabbage or pumpkin? Given the yibshon, because once you dry them up, lat meachilaninu, then they're not edible anymore. For shar peres, which implies that other kinds of fruits metame would still be metame even when they're dry. Why? Because you need them dry. Well, hey, chidami. Well, again, we have to ask, what's the scenario? If the fruit themselves and their stems are all dry, pshita, then of course, in the case of cabbage or pumpkin, they wouldn't be metame. Of course, as we said, they would be considered like wood. And then Rashi points out, if you say that, then there's not necessarily a proof for Shmuel, because Shmuel was talking about, as we said before, that where the stems of the fruit were not dried out, and therefore if he pulls it off the tree on Shabbos, then he is in fact chayav. So obviously though, for the Braisa can't be talking about that case, because then it would be posher that they're considered like wood and they're not edible. But then if we learn that way, it wouldn't be a proof for Shmuel. But elalab below your pesayin, evidently it must mean the fruit itself dried, but the stem did not attach it to its, so its parent plant is not. Where there Shmuel is saying that if he pulls it off, he's chayav chatas, and nevertheless it has tumas oislin. So therefore that would prove. That would also prove Shmuel's point that they're in that they're still metamic chumas oichlin in a case like that with other kinds of fruits. And according to Tosfos, again, the proof is also not just as far as chumas oichlin, but also as far as Shabbos. But is that a second proof for Shmuel? But the Gemara is not necessarily. In fact, the Braisa can be talking about where both the fruit itself and the stem dried. The kotzen, I'm going to ask the option. It's literally fine, but the chiddush is where he cut them from the plant, having it when they're still fresh, and he has in mind to dry them. But even then, they still have chumas oislin, even though he intends to dry them. And when he dries them, they're not going to be edible anymore. So in other words, Tosfos points out that there's not really a chiddush in the first part of the Braisa. What the Braisa is saying, when you have a case, when you have cabbages or pumpkins that are not makabel chumas oichlin because they dried up, if they're not dried, you cut them and you have in mind to dry them, nevertheless, until they dry, they are makabel chumas oichlin. Okay, so there's not necessarily a proof from this. There's not necessarily a proof from this braisa for what Shmuel is saying. Okay, but the Gemara says Toshma. Let's try with another proof. Even shenifshach, if a tree, if a branch was ripped off a tree, the word nifshach means like completely split and separated. So that branch has fruit still attached there. Ovoi peris, there was still fruit on that tree. So now, how do in conclusion, that fruit is considered for all purposes like detached. In other words, for example, if a person were to pull off a fruit on Shabbos, then he wouldn't necessarily be chayav chatos for it, because the branch itself is no longer attached to the tree. So that would apply even if the fruit is fresh. On the other hand, yobshu, but if they dried while they're on the tree, then they're still considered like they're connected to the tree. Now, my love, when the Braised said that there was that when the branch is broken off, then it's considered tlushin, my love, ma tlushin l'chol debrayim, ach mechubarin l'chol debrayim, shouldn't we assume that the Braised is being parallel, and when it says that the fruit is considered slushim, is considered detached, then it means for all purposes, both as far as Tum of Atara and as far as Shabbos, and it says mechuborim, when it says that it's dried, it's considered still connected, then it means mechuborim, for all purposes, both that you're not allowed to cut them on Shabbos, and that they don't have Tumas Erechlin. Now then, that would be against Shmuel, because Shmuel had said that when they dry on the tree, they do have Tumas Erechlin. So my answer is, what kind of a question is that? Midiiria, what kind of a question is that? Hokadisa, but Hokadisa, each one has its own din. So when we say that they're considered detached, he means yes, as far as both Shabbos and Truma. But when he says they're considered connected, Maybe not necessarily. Does it mean for all purposes? Maybe in fact it means as far as Shabbos, yes, but as far as Tumas Oichlin, not necessarily. Maybe indeed for Tumas Oichlin, there would be Makabel Tumah, not which is like Shmuel says, and therefore there'd be no contradiction on him for that. So we don't have any contradiction on Shmuel from that. Because by the way, the Rambam has a different gusa. Here we have in the Gemara Yovshu, that if the fruit dried on the tree, the Rambam actually has a different gusa Yovish, that if the tree itself dried, then nevertheless the fruit on it is considered mechuborin. And we're answering that no, the fruit on it is actually considered connected as far as Shabbos, but we have Tumas Eichlin, and in fact the Rambam passes accordingly. And says that in a case like that, a dried up tree, you still can't pick the fruit from it on Shabbos, and a person does. He's Oivan and Isur Daraisa and Chayav Chatas, and nevertheless that fruit is still Matama Tumas Oichlin, because the tree dried up, and then the Raiva disagrees with the Rambam precisely because of this difference in Girsa. The Chazon Ish points out an interesting distinction. If the fruit dries up, then that's it. It's a goner. It's never going to regenerate. As opposed to a tree dries up, then sometimes a tree can dry up, but nevertheless it can still regenerate and be freshened as long as you water it. So therefore, you would actually have a reason maybe to draw that distinction as well. So that's that then. So we see that we have a parallel to that with this case in the Mishnah where a limb was partially detached from an animal, where we could say that again it's able to have Tumas Eichlin and nevertheless it's still not considered Nevela. So then we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and we'll continue talking about these various dinim of this Eivav HaBasam Gedolim.